that, good evening, everyone. Who turned the heat off? That's the coldest 50 degrees I've felt in a long time right there. I guess when you get kind of accustomed to 70 degrees, 50 all of a sudden gets cold. All right, we're good on the sound, aren't we? Okay, good deal. Feels a little hot. A little loud. Okay, tonight we're going to be in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14. We're going to be looking at the parable of the banquet, or as we might say around here, the parable of the supper, the dinner. Luke chapter 14, verse 1. And it came to pass, as he went into the house of one of the chief Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath day, that they watched him. So Jesus was invited to the Pharisee's house on the Sabbath. And important note here, it says, and they watched him. And behold, there was a certain man before him which had the dropsy. When I was a kid, teenager, and I used to work with my dad, if I sat down on a bucket or something, he'd accuse me of having dropsy. I always thought dropsy meant you were lazy. What dropsy is a condition called, it's like edema. It's when your body retains fluid. So, you know, if you've been around someone with congestive heart failure, their bodies start to retain fluid, or, you know, a lot of conditions will cause that. If it can be pretty slight and not noticeable, but it can also be bad enough to where it's pretty obvious that someone's retaining fluid. So Jesus is invited to the Pharisee's house, and there's positioned someone with an ailment that is obvious to the eye. So this is a setup. Jesus was invited to a setup. They were watching him to see what he would do on the Sabbath with this man that had dropsy. Verse 3, and Jesus answering spake unto the lawyers and the Pharisees, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? So he just went straight to it. He's like, yeah, I'll play your games. I mean, that's another thing. We can't play games with God. I mean, these guys are trying to play games with God, and he created everything. He was there in the beginning. He created everything around us, and they're going to play games with him and expect to win some kind of riddle or some kind of situation with him. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for them, and it's not going to happen for us. God's going to be God in every situation, no matter what kind of setup we give. In verse 4, it says, he said, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? And it says in verse 4, and they held their peace, and he took him and healed him and let him go. The very fact that they had to hold their peace tells me that they didn't agree with what Jesus had done. If I'm in agreement with something, I don't have to hold my peace. I hold my peace when I'm upset about something. I got something to say, but I don't say it. That's where these Pharisees were. Jesus didn't need their permission. The only reason you'd stay quiet is either to set a trap. It's the only reason these guys stay quiet, or maybe you're unsure of your authority. And I'd say these Pharisees were at least uneasy in Jesus' presence. They were watching and monitoring what he was going to do. So that's the setting for our lesson tonight. Jesus is sitting and eating amongst not so friendly friends. He was invited, but not for righteous motives. So let's jump down to verse 7. I think the man with dropsy was invited. I don't think he was somebody that really hung out at the Pharisee's house. I think he was invited specifically to set this trap for Jesus. In verse 7 it says, and he put forth a parable to those which were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them. It looks like they were watching Jesus and Jesus was watching them. He saw how they kind of chose their places in the rooms. And he says, well, I got a lesson for these guys. In verse 8 it says, when thou art bidden, these are Jesus' words, when thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him. And he that bade thee and him come say to thee, give this man place, and thou begin with the shame to take the lowest room. We got to be careful in situations. Jesus is saying you don't know who else was invited or what regard they're held in relative to the regard you're held in. When Jesus laid this out, it had to be uncomfortable to these Pharisees. Who's the top Pharisee? Who's the top preacher in the house? Who's the best Christian in the house? Who's the most respected? That seemed to be the theme of the room that Jesus had entered into. And Jesus is giving them a lesson here. In verse 10 it says, but when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, that when he that bade thee cometh, he may say unto thee, friend, go up higher. Then shalt thou have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. Verse 11, for whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted. One of the most powerful verses in the Bible for how a Christian can live their lives. It's so important the way we position ourselves with our spirit and our obedience to God. There's nothing God can't do for us when we're obedient. He has power to do anything in the world. But when we're disobedient, it's very difficult for Him to bless that. It doesn't make sense for Him to bless that. If we can be humble, we can be exalted. So, let's get on to the lesson here. I wanted to kind of set the stage for the environment that Jesus was in, the fact that He was not sitting necessarily amongst friends. Let's jump down to verse 16. And we're going to go verse by verse through this parable here. Verse 16 it says, then said he unto him, a certain man made a great supper and bade many. He invited many people to come. Verse 17, and he sent his servant at the supper time to say to them that were bidden, come, for all things are now ready. I want to compare this supper tonight with the salvation that God has set for us. All things are ready for God's salvation. Jesus, He already died on the cross. He defeated death and He rose again. The veil of the temple was rent. Now we have access to God. We don't need a priest to go to make our sacrifice for us. The ultimate sacrifice has already been made. He sent us the Holy Spirit to draw us and to reveal and to invite us into salvation. The table is fully set. God has fully set the table in our day, and we're all invited to have that great supper. Just like this man that had made a great supper, God has prepared a great way for us. Verse 18, it says, and they all with one consent began to make excuse. The first said unto him, I have bought a piece of land, a piece of ground, and I must go and see it. I pray thee, have me excused. So this man had a great possession, and he had to go see it. I've often wondered, did he buy the piece of property without seeing it? Is that what he's saying here? Or did he just want to go spend time with his new possession? I mean, what's he trying to say here? Maybe he bought it without seeing it. You know, it's kind of like spending time with your new possession. It's kind of like when you get a new car. You'll find yourself out in the driveway sitting there working all the buttons and kind of figuring out what things are, and you just want to spend time in it. And, you know, you'll drive it carefully and make sure it's clean and a little bit further down the road, you don't so much care about the cleanliness. And I'll tell you, when I first replaced my car, I wasn't driving it on the dirt road. We got two ways to get to Bowden. I wasn't putting it on the dirt road. But now I'm wide open on the dirt road. I got almost 100,000 miles on it now. After a few years, you don't even care if you spill coffee in it. You just kind of rub it with your foot and move on, right? So this man was spending time. He wanted to spend time with his great possession. He got something new. The problem is, new never lasts. It doesn't matter how much you paid, how many bells and whistles it has. It never lasts. What about the supper? It was new. It was to be valued. It was prepared. It was being offered just this once. When something is offered just once, it has tremendous value because there is scarcity. Scarcity creates value. If it's only going to happen once, this guy's land was going to be there tomorrow. He had every opportunity to go spend time on that land. May what God has for us never become old or become second to something else in our lives. May we always recognize that it is precious, immediate, and valuable. Let's move on to verse 19. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go prove them. I pray thee have me excused. Well, this one, I mean, he said, I got to go to work. I know you prepared this meal and I'm supposed to be there, but I got to go to work. I need to prove these oxen. I have a job to do. I'm busy. I'm important and I'm needed, and I got to be in my spot. I'm expected to be in my spot, and I don't want to disappoint. There are people looking. If I don't prove them, I can't get the result when it matters. I'm results oriented. I don't have time to be sitting in your supper. I've got to go work. And that's noble, right? Maybe he was working to satisfy his needs for his family. Any number of reasons he may have justified going to work, being counted on. Maybe he was working so that he could plan a supper, so that he could be the honored host. Maybe he was just trying to get ahead. No matter what work we've got in front of us, or where we think we're needed, there's always time for God. If God has invited us in His direction, He honors the obedience for showing up for what He asked for or what He told us to do. The thing that we are clinging to, our own efforts and our own work that would make us prosper, can't prosper without God's blessing. So we can always empty our hands of our own self and our own self abilities and expect God to bless in obedience to God. There's no need to give up what God has for you to work to accomplish something. God can make it happen without your hands on it. He just wants you to be in your place and be obedient with Him. You know about how much effort God needs from us to accomplish anything? None. I can't lift it. I'm not stronger than He is. I can't solve it. I'm not smarter than He is. I'm not more resourceful. I can't pay it. I'm not richer than He is. I don't have anything that He doesn't have. So what in the world should we be trying to do that's contrary to God? We can just trust. Just trust Him. How many times has He solved the impossible in your life? I mean, there was no way out. There was nothing you could do. And then there it is. There's a solution. That's God. God does that. In verse 20, and another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. Now, this is pretty shaky ground for me right here. I'm going to be very cautious, okay? I don't want to make anybody mad in here because I don't have many friends and I don't want to lose any tonight. God doesn't want us putting our possessions in front of Him, above Him. He doesn't want us putting our work above Him. And He does not want us putting another person above Him, even if it is your wife or your husband. There's nobody that has place in our lives above God. I'm not sure why the wife wouldn't have just gone with him anyway. I mean, surely she could have come along. She might have been happy for him to go to the dinner. Yeah, please, go to the dinner. Just go. You ever gotten a nonsense excuse when you invited somebody somewhere? I've been trying to host holiday get-togethers the last few years, just trying to bring the family together and, you know, try to enjoy each other. And there's a certain member of my family that's always got an excuse. I'm going, wow, how many people can be sick, you know, year after year on this magical day? And, you know, if I had feelings, it'd probably hurt them a little bit, but I struggle to feel things sometimes. I'm kind of dead inside, just to be honest with you. But, you know, it does kind of devalue the invitation. It's like I'm opening up my house. I've prepared. I've done. Jennifer's done a whole bunch of stuff to prepare. And, you know, why not just come? The effort was put forth, and you're welcome. That's what this Lord was saying here. Don't put anything or anybody above the invitation that God has for us. Verse 21, it said, "So that servant came and showed his Lord these things." He basically came forth and said, hey, nobody's accepting your invitation. They don't want to come. I'm guessing the host looked around and he goes, after all I've spent, after all I've prepared, after all I've done, after all I gave, nobody wants it. This is a picture of the Jews rejecting Christ right here. The Lord prepared for His chosen people a way. And they rejected it. Now, next in this verse comes a picture of the Gentiles. In verse 21, just reading on down, it says, "Then the master of the house, being angry, said to his servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and the lanes of the city, and bring in hither the poor and the maimed and the halt and the blind.'" Hey, my prestigious friends don't want to come. Let's go find somebody to go enjoy this feast that I have set, that I have sacrificed for. This is where God found me and a lot of you. In the dirty places, the common places, the Latin places. In bad shape, unhealthy, with big problems, in a mess. That's what's in the byways and the alleyways. God turned His gaze toward me and invited me, and He pulled me off the path of destruction. He fed me and He showered me. He fed me and He showed me that it can be better, not showered. He's blessed on this journey that I've been on. He's cured. He's solved. He's protected. And He's promoted along the way by His own good pleasure and His own choice. I wasn't responsible for the supper. I wasn't responsible for the invitation. I was only responsible to accept the invitation. I've even had to be shown after accepting the invitation my way. No one's going to enjoy this Lord's Supper tonight without saying yes to the invitation. It's the people that said yes that get to feast on what He's prepared. And God gives us our will to say yes or no. He relinquishes that to us, and it is our choice. Verse 22, "And the servant said, 'Lord, it is done as Thou hast commanded, and yet there is still room. There's always room with God. He's not turning people away. Verse 23, and the Lord said unto the servant, go out into the highways and the hedges and compel them to come in, that my house may be filled. God desires that all would come. Not an empty seat, not an empty mansion in heaven. All are invited. In 24 it says, for I say unto you, that none of those men which were bidden shall taste of my supper. We can reject God and not enjoy His fruits. Not accepting Him, His invitation means no supper. Not accepting His Son means no heaven. And just as bad, it means living life down here on earth without Jesus. And it says there went great multitudes with Him, and He turned to them and said, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. God's saying I have to be most important. You have to keep me at the top in your life. Exodus 34:14 says, for thou shalt worship no other God, for the Lord whose name is jealous is a jealous God. God tells us that He has to be first in our lives. I think sometimes we make life extremely difficult by not accepting what God has laid out for us. Proverbs says if we'll acknowledge Him, He'll direct our paths. It doesn't have to be as hard as we make it. We give up blessings by wanting our way in our time. And sometimes God's blessings is in a certain spot at a certain time. So we have to listen carefully and obey so that we're in the spot at the time where He can bless us. It's all about the obedience that we've been talking about tonight. May we not be guilty of turning down an invitation to feast with our Lord. Thank you for your attention.